All right, hour two, home improvement show for everybody. Welcome in, 97.1 FM listeners. Let's drum up some more talk, some more questions, some more answers. Let's see how we can help you out right here today. Now we've got twice the fan base, twice the crowd. How do you find me? 314-436-7900. Dial in. Any question you have about around your house, from the roof down to the foundation, we can help you out right here today. Again, 314-436-7900. And we've had some great conversations so far, some really good questions. Your general advice on carpet coming up that was glued to stairs. What can you do? What might cost less? The kind of conversations and what we're trying to do to help people out every day, all through the week, and really make those good, educated decisions on what am I thinking? What would I like? What do I really want to get out of it? How long do you plan on staying in the home? There's so many questions and topics and conversations to have and to really think through. So many factors play into what kind of an investment are you going to make into your home. Are you trying to just repair it short term and you're leaving soon? Are you trying to really make it your forever home and you just want to be there and stay there and really be committed and keep it? Then, you know, those two situations really have different thoughts, different outcomes, and it's good to examine and talk through both of those types of situations to find what might really work out best for you, what you're looking to do and trying to find. So let's see if we can help out a little bit more. We'll jump to the phone, see Wesley's there. And hey, Wesley, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for calling. What's going on?
Well, I'm a new home buyer, so it's been about a month, and we've just been working on the house pretty much every weekend. It's a second job. So,
all right.
The goal is just to make it as much of a home as possible, and we've only been there about a month, and the attic is just maybe given a little bit more trouble, and I'm wondering where that falls on the priority scale to have that checked out as far as insulation goes. I'm pretty new to it, pretty green, so gonna have a company come out and take a look at it, maybe get a few estimates, but there might be pests up there. Just wondering your thoughts on where that falls and getting it squared away as we kind of move into the hottest of the summer, it seems like.
Yeah, and definitely The attic insulation is a great way to really look at saving energy in your home. You're headed in a great direction and you're doing a great thing by looking at it and checking into it. There's different ways to insulate, and there's other things to think about with that attic space and with the insulation value between the attic and the ceiling of the home. And one of the biggest things to really consider while doing that is how you isolate air infiltration between the attic and between the living space of the home. And there's certain things in the home, there's products in the home and part of the home that can really make it a lot better or a lot worse. So if you're in an older home and you have an old whole house attic fan, like in the hallway ceiling that, you know, you turn on and louvers open and it pulls air from the home, those can be a grave energy sucker and they don't insulate and they leak air a lot. The attic access, just the drywall lid that you get in and out of the access from your closet or your hallway, that can leak a lot of air. And then any penetrations through the ceiling that are up against that attic can leak a lot of air. So ceiling fans, light fixtures, can lights, anything in the ceiling has kind of a seam around it where the drywall's cut and you could leak air through there. So going through that attic and finding all those devices and using some spray foam to kind of seal that to keep the air from passing from one to another. So your temperature R value is very important for the temperature difference from inside the home to the attic space. But your air infiltration is very, very important because of heat permeating through, or heat either permeates down in the summer into your living space, or it raises up during the winter through all those seams and you lose conditioned air into the attic while you're trying to heat the home. So it kind of works both ways, summer, winter. So sealing all that up, either closing off or getting a better whole house attic fan to keep that from leaking air and having a lot of air infiltrating. And then how you address that attic kind of scuttle, that pass through piece of drywall, how you get in and out of the attic, how you address that and putting some weather stripping and good insulation on that will keep air from infiltrating through that. So what I would recommend you do is ask open-ended kind of questions to these companies coming in to talk about the insulation, kind of ask them, what would you do and why? And then if they don't talk a lot about the air transfer or a lot of air sealing, just kind of, again, don't direct them, but just ask them something open that says, like, I heard somebody talking about the importance of making sure air doesn't pass through. Do you guys recommend or do anything for that? And let them kind of answer, and you'll get a feel for how detailed they are and how well they perform that type of work. Does that make sense? That sound helpful?
Yeah, it does. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And the other thing I would say is there's three different types of attic insulation and systems that you can do, and see if any of them talk about those types and what they do typically and why. Because fiberglass, the regular kind of white bibs kind of insulation that they blow in, lets a lot of air through it. And air can blow through it. If you go to the medium next step up with cellulose blown in insulation, it compacts more, it's a little denser, and it blocks more of that air infiltrating. And then the third route is basically you take out all the fiberglass kind of insulation, you spray a layer of spray foam over the entire backside of the drywall, kind of the attic floor or backside of the first or second floor ceiling, completely air seal that, and then you can blow the fiberglass on top of that. And the fiberglass will give you that temperature difference, what we call the R value, and the spray foam will completely air seal every penetration between the attic and the house. So, and your dollars go the same way. The cheapest is going to be the fiberglass type. The cellulose is going to be kind of $2 signs in the middle, kind of like looking at a menu. And then the third way with the foam is going to be the most expensive $3 signs, but it's going to work the best. So let them talk about that and just kind of feel with your gut in that conversation. Do they seem like they know what they're doing? You'll get a feeling.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
All right. Perfect. Not a problem. I appreciate the call, Wesley. Something we're up against quite a bit, and how your home really works as a system from one layer to the other, and really getting the best scientific results for how and what we should do here in our climate and here in St. Louis. So, hey, we got to jump into a very quick break. Sarah, if you can hang on for just a couple minutes. We'll do this. Don't go anywhere. Stay with us. More home improvement. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show right here live, KMOX. Rich Orr is here for you today and every Saturday. And you can find me, anything you need about your house, 314-436-7900, right here on KMOX and 97.1 at the same time. We've got Sarah on the line, so let's, as promised through the break, let's jump into Sarah and see what's going on. Hey, Sarah, how can we help you?
Well, good morning. I just have a quick question. My laundry room is not even. I bought a new washer and dryer, and now I can't use it because the floor is uneven. What can I do about that? What's the best solution?
So your new unit should have adjustable feet that you could use to level that out and level up the units. If the floor is more out of level than the height the feet will allow to adjust, then you just need to put something underneath those feet. And they make they call it like a isolation kind of puck or something. It's a rubber thing that looks like a hockey puck, and it's got a little spot in it that's about a quarter inch or so deep, like a drilled out center circle. So if you imagine about a 1-inch thick hockey puck with a little bit of a spot where that foot for that washer or dryer could go, then you could put that isolation puck kind of on the side that needs to be lifted more, and then you can adjust the feet to get the right height to where you just need to make the top surface of the washer and the dryer level, because they're not going to spin, they're not going to operate properly until they're actually sitting level.
Machine, I've just bought it, and I don't want to break the new one again.
Yeah, no, so absolutely. Yep.
So I'm wondering, they're telling me tear up the whole floor and try to level the whole thing. There's no basement. There's only dirt underneath that. It looks like that was an add-on room all of a sudden.
Oh, so it's just like a concrete floor on an added room?
There's no basement. There's only dirt underneath of it. And then I don't know. I don't know. I'm saying a foot high, the flooring.
I got you. So, yeah, it's probably like a little crawl space that you can barely fit into or whatever underneath it. So, yes, you can basically rip out the floor. You can pour some floor leveler that will level that area of that floor. And then you can put in a new floor, and that would be the best solution. It's going to come, obviously, at the greatest expense. And the other thing I would say, go into that level of commitment on how do I make this work and make the washer and dryer sit level, you might also want to have kind of a foundation company out to kind of look and say, all right, why is this floor out of level? Is the foundation moving, sinking? Is there more going on with the house that's making it out of level? Those are both great things to do. But in the interim, or if you're just not that far into it and you're not like, I don't want to do a whole new floor, I just need things level, then you just kind of do like I was saying, use some shims, use some of these isolation kind of feet that you can put underneath it and just level that out and get it to where it's sitting level for now, and it should then work. Just depends on how far out of level your floor truly is. Hopefully it's not that far out of level.
I don't know, but that sounds like the simplest and easiest way to solve the problem.
Yep.
Thank you very much for your help.
Yep. No, very, very welcome. It's kind of like shimming cabinets. You install cabinets level, but not every floor, even new built, is not perfectly level. That's why we make shims. When we put in a door, we kind of shim it to make it straight, plumb, level. We do the same thing with cabinets, with everything else, and we just kind of got to do that with our our washers, dryers, stoves. That's why they make the adjustable feet, because they just know not everything's perfect that way. So let's jump over to Patrick and see what's going on there with Patrick. Hey, how you doing today?
Great. Thank you for getting me on the show. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I have an attic fan as well, and I go through a couple rituals, and maybe you could help me out on when the winter gets here and I can feel all the super cold air coming down through those attic fan vents, the louvers.
Yep.
I get up there and put some blankets and insulation and everything over top of that, and that seals it up pretty good for the winter. But then, you're in the spring and the summer-fall transition. Like, oh, man, I didn't get up there and uncover that thing yet, so I can't just turn this thing on.
Yeah.
I thought back in the day early on they actually had like a magnet cover that you could throw up there on top of those louvers. Is that a thing, or do I have that wrong, or what's kind of a little bit of an easier transition on? I don't have it winterized or summerized, so I don't have to climb up in there and get all this covering off to keep that, that cold or hot air, because like in the summer, well, it's hot air because I uncovered it in spring and I didn't cover it back up.
Yeah,
when I started running the AC, what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, and it sounds like you use this quite a bit.
Yes.
The spring and fall.
Yes.
So there, I have seen the magnets that basically just stick over those louvers and just kind of block that air from transferring through. I've also seen people use kind of like a piece of plexiglass with just like some Velcro, and just kind of like put Velcro strips and just Velcro this piece of plexiglass over the louvers. So right. That's good you could do either of those to kind of block that air from pushing down or from sucking up from the interior into the attic in the winter. But what you don't get with that is any type of R value. So that magnet you stick on there, that plexiglass, in the winter, you go to touch that, it's going to be freezing cold like it's outside.
Right.
And you're going to be running the heat. When you do that, you might get condensation forming on that because of the temperature differences. So the advice would be still go in the attic and cover that up to try and get more separation and more of an insulation R value factor. So you'd be doing both anyways. And if the one works, then why bother doing both? But if you really love it and you use that fan enough, they do make whole house attic fans that are new, and they open and close from the attic side, and they will insulate. When those doors shut, it's like a sealed insulation value. You can get different values, so you can get up to like an R38 kind of attic insulation value on one of these fans, and when you turn it on, the doors open. When you turn it off, the doors close. And it's an awesome, awesome system for people that use those attic fans in the spring and the fall. The hard part with those new fans is they're not the same size. So they make these to kind of fit between trusses. And the old attic fans are like a big square. So so to install the new fan, You got to frame the opening size smaller. You got to drywall the ceiling, patch paint, texture.
Right.
You got to insulate around it where you've added framing and dry. And then you can have that fan installed and working really well. So it's a pretty good size endeavor to get the new fan. I'm surprised they've never made one like a common size.
Would fit in the opening.
Exactly. Right. I wish they would, but I've never found one. But I've put a few of these attic fans in, and for the use, they can save you a lot on energy in the spring and fall running that and really keeping that house cool.
Right.
And so you might live there long enough, you might get your money back.
Sure. Well, that's... My situation's a little complicated, but I think you'd have a lot of listeners that, well, while I'm 50 and I can climb up and down a ladder and get up into the attic and fix all that and cover it up, it just seems like, well, man, there ought to be a little easier way than, I got a 9-foot ceiling and it's almost 10 in the garage, and I got to kind of dangle to get on the ladder that I got to get in there. Get in and out of there, cover it up, uncover it. And when you had the attic fan guy on earlier, that's why I was like, yeah, I want to call in and ask but that makes a whole lot of sense on there's some better fans out now. But
yep, absolutely. And just so you know, here where I work at Mosby Building Arts, we can do every step of all of that. So we have a painting division where we can do drywall, painting, patching. We've got the carpenters, we've got the electricians. We could do a project like that from start to finish so that you're not looking for, okay, I got to find somebody to frame this, and then I got to find somebody to drywall it, and then I got to find an insulator. I got to insulate it myself on the backside, and then I've got to, we're kind of a one-stop shop for stuff like this. So if anybody's interested in something like that, they can certainly give our office a call and get something set up for us to come out and look at something like that, because we don't do a ton of them, but we've got the people, the employees, and the ability to do every step of that whole thing.
So, absolutely. Nice.
All right. Yep. I appreciate the call, Patrick. And for everybody out there, you can find Mosby Building Arts, 314-909-1800, or you can go online, call Mosby. It's CallMosby.com. Find out information there, make appointments there. We're going to jump into our middle hour break. CJ, if you could hang on for a couple minutes, we will get to you as soon as we return. All right, we are back. Got plenty going, plenty for you all today. Hey, CJ, if you're out there, give us a call back. We seem to have got disconnected, so we'll be here for you along with everybody else. 314-436-7900 here to help you today, just like every Saturday, just like 5 days a week as I'm running around for Mosby Building Arts and really just trying to help people come to good decisions on their situations. There's something different for everybody, and really depending on what your plans are for yourself, for your home. We go out and we look at these different projects, and every conversation's a little bit different. And sometimes it's kind of funny sometimes because we get this information kind of even like right away. Like I have an appointment and they're looking to replace their deck, and I knock on the door, and when the homeowner answers the door, he immediately just says, "Hey, just to let you know, I'm selling this home within 2 years. I'm retiring, and I'm moving to Arizona to be near my grandkids." And I'm like, well, we have a 10-year workmanship warranty. That might not be the best thing that you're after at that point. So we've got to figure out the fit and what's happening and what are your plans. And so we're looking at the different deck materials, and we're looking at all these different options to say, how can we help this on more of a 2 year next purchaser plan. And now I've also, we've used that as a selling tool. I just had a client where we did all kinds of work around the outside of the house, and we did gutters and we repaired wood and painted and made everything. And they needed a whole new roof from storm damage, and having our workmanship warranty and saying, "Hey, I got this great roof and this great gutter system and all this great work from Mosby Building Arts. And now you have a 10-year workmanship warranty that they knew they were leaving right away." Great repeat client of our company. And we've done a couple different jobs for them over the years. And they were using that as their advantage to say, "Hey, this warranty is transferable and you can have the same great type of warranty and work that I got on through you now owning this house." So it's about finding that value and seeing what are you really after, and what do you really need, and what are your plans. So we're working on that, and I'm working on that on a daily basis, pretty much for everybody I come across. And I'm doing it here again every Saturday for all of you. Again, remember, we've got a little bit of time left. 314-436-7900 finds me right here. And we did have a couple calls come in that I'll try and see if I can get through a little bit of this while we have some time, because we had one person call in, didn't want to go on the air, but they basically brought up a comment about the newer, the tankless water heaters, and they brought up the fact of, do you need to flush out a tankless water heater? And we've had a lot of conversations about flushing out your tanked water heater and doing that once a year. And we've talked a lot with my licensed plumber at Mosby Building Arts and other plumbers. And there's, even on the tanked ones, there's some concerns there. There's, should you flush it or not? And what the consensus I've come up with the most is that it is a good thing to flush them out and get the minerals and calcium and all that out of that tank. But if you've never done it and you've had your water heater like 10 years, then it's probably not a good time to start that, and maybe wait till you get a new one. And if you start it from the beginning and you do it every year, that's a great thing. So now, should you flush the tankless water heater? So you would, if you think of the system and how it works, then you would probably think absolutely not, because it's just running water through it. But again, all those minerals, all the hard water, the mineral scale can still build up. And they do recommend that you actually flush out a tankless water heater. So they work well. They're tankless. You'll never run out of hot water, but there is still maintenance to them. That is a good thing. And it's a little harder to do, because you have to kind of disconnect the hot and the cold side and hook up hoses to kind of flush through this new tankless water heater. So you'll have to be a really good DIYer, or you'll have to really be vigilant and learn and understand how to do it. Might want to get a plumber involved if you're just not that outgoing when it comes to plumbing work and getting this deep into this type of work. But flushing it out would be good, because it can prevent that scale buildup. It can maintain its energy efficiency for you. It can help avoid costly repairs later, because that's when most everybody's going to find out if they don't do this, is when it just isn't working as well as it used to, or there's some sort of issue with it. And then, of course, keeping up and staying within warranty requirements. There's a lot of them that actually require an annual flush to keep up with the warranty on the unit. And if something goes wrong with the unit while it's still under warranty, they may ask you to put together some type of proof that you've done that. So if you're good and you do it yourself and you can work through that, I would document it. I would record it. I would take some photos that has dates, something like that, where you can make sure that you maintain that warranty going on from that point on. So, hey, that's something good maintenance you're going to be required to do for those units. We've got Dan and Mike on the line. Let's jump into our final break, and then we'll get to Dan and Mike as soon as we return, and we'll get through both those calls prior to the end of the show. Hang on real quick. More home improvement when we return. Welcome back. Welcome back. Home Improvement Show. Let's get straight to Dan and see what's going on in Dan's home. Hey, Dan, how can we help you out?
Yes. I was wondering if you could recommend a company. We have a Jacuzzi Whirlpool older model bathtub, and we got a problem with the on-off jets sticking on, and we're down to the last thing we can do And if that doesn't work, we're going to probably try to get somebody to service it. Well, we're having a very hard time of finding somebody that will do that. If you would know of anybody or could send us in the right directions for that, I would really appreciate it.
Well, so yeah, unfortunately, I don't know offhand anybody that would service those older Whirlpool tubs like that. Because even plumbing companies don't necessarily do a lot to work on that actual tub itself. So the only thing I would say is maybe depending if you could figure out the manufacturer of the tub and then maybe call some tub manufacturers like Whirlpool and Kohler and see if they have any recommendations on who works on repairing an older tub like that. That's
It's made by Jacuzzi. It's got the Jacuzzi World brand emblem on it, you know.
Yeah, and most of the new stuff is the air jet tubs that use only air. So that's the only thing I could say is try a few manufacturers and see if they know of anybody.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, wish I could help more on that one. But, yeah, dude, you get into these older systems, and sometimes it is very difficult to find anybody that's going to want to work on anything like that. But let's jump over to Mike and see what's happening with Mike. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, how you doing? Bought a home a few years ago, kind of on the hill area. It's a 100-year-old home. They gutted it down to the stud and rebuilt everything, but they didn't do much to the basement at all. And one of the concerns I have is under the front porch, pretty big porch, it's just a dirt floor, and they put plastic on it.
Uh-huh.
Is there any other options I can do that would be easy as opposed to instead of maybe just getting somebody to pour concrete down in there, which I guess would be the best. But any other options for something like that as opposed to just having plastic sitting on that dirt?
So is there's definitely another option that could work a lot better because, yes, you get a lot of moisture vapor from the ground and through the dirt. You even get it through concrete because concrete's porous. So if you got enough moisture down there, even if they pour concrete, you still could get some moisture in those older foundations. So there's rubber liners that you can put in. And there's one that I've used quite a bit called DuraScrim that it's kind of like a white, kind of plasticky, rubbery liner, and basically you seal it so you can seal it with like white kind of flashing tape. You can run it up the walls so it covers like the actual foundation wall too. And it's, if you think about it like a reverse swimming pool liner, when you seal it to everything, and generally when we get up around the top of the foundation, what we do is we spray it with a spray foam insulation around the top of that foundation, and that will seal that to the top of the foundation, kind of the band board, if it's wood, that sort of thing, of the front porch, and it'll keep all the moisture vapor underneath it. If you just lay down a piece of plastic, all the moisture vapor just comes out around the edges or the seams of the plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really hold it down very well. Plastic with some rock just doesn't keep moisture vapor down real well. But these kind of rubber sealed systems will hold the moisture underneath it.
Now, they did spray foam all the stone foundation walls around the dirt and underneath the porch. So all the walls and the ceiling, they did spray. They just didn't do anything to the dirt other than the plastic.
So is that plastic white?
It's just like a white clear plastic, like a thick clear plastic.
Oh, so it's clear, so you kind of see the dirt through it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that DuraScrim would have been perfect because you could have just lapped it up the foundation wall about a foot and then sprayed right over it, and that'll actually seal it to that wall. So that might be the right thing to do is you kind of scrape away some of the foam spray insulation around the bottom 6 inches to a foot, put in that rubbery or plasticky. It's white. It seals. You can seal tape the seams, get it up the wall a little ways, and then re-spray foam, and that'll lock everything in.
Okay. Do I put anything over the DuraScrim or just leave that as it is?
You could just leave it as it is. It might be nice to kind of try and scrape and level the dirt a little bit just so it sits a little flatter. If you were to go in there or for any reason, any maintenance reasons or anything, it's good to have it a little bit flat. But other than that, nope, that can go right over the dirt, seal up to the walls, and then you're really, really good.
And where would you buy something like this DuraScrim?
Well, so we get it through, we have an insulation company that does it.
Okay.
That we get it through Goley Insulation. They're out in Illinois, and we just have them do it for us. They'll put it in, they'll do the spray foam, all of that. So you can go that route so that you don't have to worry about it. Or depending on the size of the porch and the floor, you can just buy rubber. You can buy black rubber. You can buy TPO roofing would work really well, just a white rubber. And you could do that yourself and get a spray foam kit, and you could spray foam around that bottom edge again yourself. And it could be a good DIY. I would say use like a rubber roofing membrane.
Okay.
Is what you'd be looking for to put down.
Okay. I appreciate it. One last question. I didn't mean to throw another one here, but they didn't do much of the basement floor either. And there's a bunch of cracks and it's somewhat uneven. I've never used this liquid concrete or, I was thinking of maybe just pouring that on, trying to clean the concrete just to seal cracks as opposed to tearing up concrete. Does that sound, I've just never used that before.
Are you thinking of pouring over the entire floor or just pouring it in to fill the cracks?
It could be a little of both. There's some areas that might be large sections that I want to pour over, and then in some sections the concrete's not terrible.
Yeah,
those sections might be just cracks.
So I'm running out of time, but I would say if you're looking at the whole floor, you're probably better off pouring new concrete so that it's thicker and it lasts longer. Thinner layers aren't going to last real well over those cracks. They're going to come back through. They're going to migrate through as that floor is moving. So if you want to just fill the cracks with a urethane sealant, caulk, that type of thing, that's great to do. But going over the whole thing, I would break it out and do new concrete to try and get lasting value so you don't end up with the same thing 1 year later, possibly. So, hey, I'm completely out of time. Great call. Great question, Mike. Glad I could help. For everybody else, be good to each other. Be good to your homes. I'll talk to you next week.